your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Mr. Britton.
Good afternoon.
G'day, mate. How's it going? Any relation to the New Zealand motorcycle maker?
Same name. I don't know that there's any direct relation, but might be way back somewhere.
Right on. Just thought I'd... You know what? That question just came from my head, so I thought I'd ask it.
Now,
glad you did.
David Britton, John Hernshaw from the University of Canterbury has just received a nice little award.
I thought you were going to say prestigious. Not?
Yes, he has. Given a Lifetime Achievement Award from the International Dark Sky Association.
Mm-hmm.
He was director at the observatory down at Mount John from 1976 to 2008, and in that time the local area, the lighting gradually got brighter and brighter, which was starting to affect the observations at the observatory. And he successfully lobbied the Mackenzie District Council to bring in a lighting ordinance restricting the amount of light pollution. However, that was primarily for astronomical research. But the side effect was that astro-tourism started picking up. And they then were able to form the first dark sky reserve in the Southern Hemisphere, the Airaki Mackenzie International Dark Sky Reserve. And so that really has kicked off a huge expansion in astro-tourism in the area. Obviously having a bit of a hit this year. He's been... given that very prestigious award.
It was prestigious, I wondered, actually. Yeah. Also, John, any relation to that mountain at all?
what can you tell us about the Mount John Observatory?
You couldn't help yourself, could you? Yeah.
What can you tell us about that particular observatory?
I'm just wondering, I think you might have skipped one of our topics.
Okay.
I think John just wants to talk about the thing called John. So that's...
Well, yeah, that is important, and I was able to actually discuss that with the AGM for the Royal Astronomical Society of New Zealand meeting in the weekend, and he was congratulated by his peers at that as well. But no, actually, the feature story I was hoping to talk about today was about
NASA. Water
on the Moon.
Ah, yes. Tell us about water on the moon.
Yeah, this was announced sort of overnight, really, for us. And there's a little bit of confusion in some of the reports I've seen in various media. The important thing is what has been now identified as possible water or sites for water on the sunlit surface of the moon. Okay, so really science has been finding signs of water on the moon since about 2009 and confirmed in different ways. One way was by crashing a rocket body into a crater in the southern part of the moon and observing the plume from that with an orbiting satellite at the moon and detecting water vapor in that plume. So, I mean, they've known about water on the moon. What this does is to increase the amount that might be there. They think up to about 40,000 square kilometres could potentially hold some water. Now, that's area where there's patches of water, and some of those patches could be as small as 1 centimetre in size. So this is a very detailed two results, actually. It's from two different sources. One is from the SOFIA Observatory. That's an airborne telescope that's on a plane. It usually makes annual visits to New Zealand and flies out of Christchurch, but it couldn't do it this year because of COVID. But it's airborne. It flies up high in the atmosphere, above 90% of the atmosphere, and it can see stuff in the infrared very well. And so that telescope was able to distinguish between water molecules and hydroxyl molecule, which is one oxygen, one hydrogen. Water, of course, is two hydrogens and one oxygen. So they've known about hydroxyl atoms attached to rocks, but now they've been able to distinguish water in a couple of places near where the Apollo 11 landed, and another place called Clavius Crater, which features in 2001 Space Odyssey. We're talking about 100 to 400 parts per million concentration water. So we're not talking about puddles or lakes or anything like that. We're talking about water probably sandwiched between grains of material in the lunar surface and in the dust. And the other study used the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, a spacecraft that's been orbiting the moon for a very long time, and that is the one that found these little traps, thousands and thousands of them. The thing is that they didn't think that they're going to find it in the sunlit side, but these small cold traps still never see sunlight because they're just the shape of them and so on. And when you're talking about cold being minus 170 degrees or so, that water ice is rock. It's solid, hard rock. And so it's probably been trapped there for, you know, a billion years or so. So this all will help. And astronauts going back to the moon and hopefully being able to stay there a bit longer than they did last time.
So there will be amounts that are significant to the people on the moon. Would they be able to find it and drink it, perhaps?
Is it a bit embarrassing that we didn't find that on the moon, that all the times that we've been to the moon, in a sense?
Well, they weren't looking for water ice there. I mean, they did look for water in the rocks that were brought back from the moon.
Oh, come on, guys.
They found tiny amounts in a couple of rocks. But, yeah, the sample size was too small. Is the basic reason, and they were looking for other things in the geology. Now, I think the main problem in what has been announced really is, to date, there's been no industrial process carried out on the moon, or even in space. I mean, in the space station, sure, but not out in space. And it's a vacuum, so a lot of processes you might use aren't going to work. The temperature on the moon varies between minus 240 degrees and plus 120 degrees. Lubricants, if you want to have oil lubricating the bearings in your wheels, don't work. They're going to freeze. Normal liquids boil at the low air pressure or no air pressure. Also, the dust on the moon is very sticky. It clung to the astronaut spacesuits from the Apollo program, and they had to be careful that it didn't come off and go into their lungs. It's very damaging, a bit like asbestos.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it's all good and well.
Yes, I mean, it still have done any technological or industrial processing on the moon in some way. It's very hard to know if anything is going to be
possible.
Workable, you know. So it's very, very well to say that water's there, but you've got to find a way of getting it in sufficient quantities that you can use it.
True, eh?
Yeah, so they're way off from that, yeah.
Really, though, we're just trying to see if something's swimming around in there or whatever, eh? That's what we want. We want, like, a little...
yeah,
just,
alien life, well...
Just, like, frozen, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, just like that. Now, shall we move on to NASA sending an asteroid out to scoop... what is it? A probe? To
craft bag asteroid samples.
Yeah, yeah, this is a little craft that's been orbiting asteroid Bennu.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like an ounce bag, like the craft brand.
Well, it's a bit more complex than that. It went down to the surface as a practice run earlier, didn't touch the surface, but was just a practice run off the target site. This time they actually did it, and when it got down, it has a probe that it... injects into the surface, and then it uses stored nitrogen gas to blow away material and disturb the surface so they can loosen material from below the actual top surface layer. And it goes into a holder They in fact got so much that it started leaking out. The holder didn't close properly, and some of the material was floating away from it, so that they were going to do a bunch of stuff, but they decided to stow it as quickly as possible. So basically they were too successful. They got so much material that they haven't been able to weigh how much they have.
Do they know what this asteroid is made out of? Have they managed to ascertain that?
Well, the asteroid is leftover material from the formation of the solar system.
Ah, yes.
So that's why you want to get their materials to find out more about, how the Earth got here, for instance. Mm. So that craft will be there for a little while yet, it'll get back to Earth in September 2023. So it's a little way back before it returns. In the meantime, though, a Japanese spacecraft that did retrieve material from asteroid Ryugu a little while ago, it's due back in December. So that was a little closer, that asteroid, so it's got back quicker. It won't land. What it'll do is release a capsule with the samples on board, and that'll be landing in the Woomera rocket range in Australia, in the same way as they did with the Hayabusa probe that came back from Takara in 2010. So, two different asteroids, two different missions, and hopefully there'll be good results that come out of them.
Could there be anything like a sci-fi type thing with strange bacteria that takes over the Earth in these samples?
Very, very, very unlikely.
Is it likely that both teams will be getting paid the same rate, or is one team being paid a little bit more than the other team, depending on the contract?
So I couldn't quite hear that.
Does everybody get paid the same rate? Like these people on different missions, do they get paid like different?
Well, one's a Japanese mission, and the other's NASA.
Yen, okay.
So
US dollar.
I presume they're being paid separately. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's like a standard pay rate for an astronaut. Now to the night sky, though. Let's get to these telescope situations.
Well, we've got a big bright moon, full moon on Sunday coming up. But on Thursday, just before that happens, the moon's going to go quite close to Mars, only 3 degrees away, so that might make a good photograph for people after sunset. And we've got Jupiter and Saturn, they're very high in the sky in the northwest as well. Mars is over in the east, but very easy to spot, especially with the moon going past it. And in the morning, Venus is still low in the east in the morning sky. Mercury has disappeared now. It's too close to the sun to have a look at.
Never like Mercury.
So let's hope clear days, these lovely weather continues. Even looking at the sun has improved, which people do with solar telescopes. We're into the new solar cycle, so the number of sunspots is starting to increase, just in a small way, but we're up to sunspot number 17 for the current sunspot cycle.
Mm.
Another 5.5 years till we get to the maximum, when it'll be a much bigger number than that.
Okay. Well, and what does Halloween at the Stardome look like? People dressing up in like satellites and stuff? You do have best costume spot prizes. What does that mean? Answer all these questions, please, David.
People encouraged to come along in your favourite Halloween costume. Mm. There will be spot prizes given out during the shows. There are four different shows. 11 a.m., 2 p.m., 5 p.m. and 7:30.
Okay.
Different movie each one. So there's The Monster Family, The House with the Clock in Its Walls, Coraline, and 7:30 at night is Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Oh, Beetlejuice, yes!
The classic, was it 1988 or whatever it was. Yeah, so that one, they'll be slightly different. There'll be a bar open for that one in the evening. And before that show starts, there'll be a little bit of info about Beetlejuice, the star, which people love calling Beetlejuice, of course. So a little bit different for that one. Need to make bookings for these shows.
Okay.
Either ringing the observatory at 624-1246 or go to the website stardome.org.nz. You can book online as well.
Awesome.
Brilliant.
Well, thank you very much, David, from Stardome. We'll check in with you in a fortnight's time.
I look forward to it.
Awesome.
Cheers, mate.
Bye-bye.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.